Good morning to the intrepid few who made it up so early in the morning. I'm impressed. I almost didn't do it myself. I'm honored to be in a session that is in honor of Sylvia. I mean, she's one of my heroes and couldn't have been a better match for me. I think some of you might be familiar with this initiative we've presented here in the past, but we've just finished our initial four-year effort to try to move out best evidence-based information, practices, tools into the construction industry. It's been a humbling experience. The construction industry is ripe for innovation and prevention, and yet a very, very difficult industry to impact. But I'm very excited about the work I've been able to do together with my team, including Charlotte Chang, who's here with us this morning, and Eileen Beatty and Jessica Bunting, and now a newer member of our team, Kelsey Scruggs. And so it's a terrific group of people who are all just trying to find our way in terms of how do you get from research to action. And NIOSH funded this initiative, initially a four-year initiative, based on the review by the National Academies that encouraged NIOSH, the construction program, to really focus more. Now we know a lot about what we could do to make construction safer, but how are we going to get the vital information out there? How are we going to persuade those who need to act to actually take action? So, and this was in some ways an experimental program, and they chose to do it in construction because it is the most dangerous industry in the country. I know we have debates with the ag people all the time because, okay, they have higher rates of death, but we have more people. So they decided, let's look at construction and see what we can do here. And because we had a good set of stakeholders to work with who were positioned to work together, and particularly at CPWR, the Center for Construction Research and Training, which had a long history, 15 years of working with a research consortium to do action-oriented research, research that would make a difference in construction. So when I came on the scene 4 years ago, we had to first say, well, what do we even mean by research to practice? And this is the traditional flow of, you know, how we think about public health research, that you define the problem, then you do research to better identify the risks and protective factors, then you develop prevention strategies, you test them out, see what works, and then you make sure they get out there in the world. And, you know, the problem with this flow is that last step is the step that tends to not be funded. It's left to researchers to do if they can, and this is not what researchers are generally trained to do. Researchers are trained to do research, not to do dissemination, not to create change in the workplace. And although in this field there's a lot of interest by the researchers, there's also, you know, the lack of that background and training, and definitely the lack of resources. People use more than the money they had to do the research, and there's nothing left over to do the dissemination piece. So our charge was to figure out how to do in a systematic way how to move forward in that last step along the pathway. And in our thinking about it, we also thought this version of it was a little too unidirectional, and that there really needed to be more of a interaction between research and practice. It's not just, you know, we the researchers come up with the answers and we try to get you the folks to accept what we're telling you is the best thing to do, but rather people who are in the field need to be defining what the research needs are. They need to be helped defining how to do the research. They need to be defining how to use the research, so that we need to be building those kind of relationships in along the process. So that's part of our view of what we mean by research to practice. And many people mean different things by it. They use different words for it. They might call it translational research. They might call it dissemination and implementation science. They might call it any number of things, but and mean slightly different things by it. But this is what we mean by it. And in terms of thinking about, well, what have we done in this first 4 years? How far did we get? We're trying to use a model developed by Wandersman and colleagues that's called the Interactive Systems Framework for Dissemination and Implementation. And D&I is kind of becoming the new buzzword in the field for this. But the idea is, And now I'm going to refer to my notes. The idea is to be thinking about what you're achieving in three categories. And the first is synthesis and translation. And here we're saying, we know that if information is accessible and user-friendly and clearly lays out the need for innovation in prevention practices, the likelihood of successful dissemination and implementation is increased. So that's a first step. And a lot of times people think that's the first and the last step, which is let's put out better information that's user-friendly, that's, you know, for a lay audience, and that's what R2P is all about, is translating the information. But in this model, we would say that that is a first and necessary but insufficient step. And the second is that however good it is, information alone rarely is enough to change well-entrenched practices. So you also need to build support systems and capacity for change. You have to have ways to support, incentivize, nudge, and create all kinds of capacity to really have a sustainable change take place. And the third is that ultimately of all, you know, all the dissemination in the world, you can get the word out there, but if nobody is adopting the change or accepting the new information, acting on it, taking on the new practices or tools, then really what have you accomplished in the end? And so this really challenges us to try to think about all of these stages, not just one. So, and it does get harder as you move up the scale. You know, it's easiest to put out information, hardest to make real change happen. So in terms of synthesis and translation, we've done a number of things. One is we developed these roadmaps that we use with our researchers and our research consortium, and now we've introduced it at NIOSH as well. And somebody at the meeting here today told me, oh, I teach that now in my research methods class. And I was really excited about that. And the idea is it takes a research team through the process of thinking through, in the end, why are you doing this work? What do you hope will happen with it? How could it make a difference? Who's going to need to use it? What are your relationships with those people who you need to work with? Who are the intermediaries who might help you work with that group of people? You know, in the end, do you want to have a policy impact? Are you talking with policymakers? Do you want to, you know, have impact on practice of contractors? Are you talking with contractor groups? If you want to influence a union apprenticeship training program, are you actually talking with the apprenticeship directors? And how can we help you do that so you have a systematic plan in place for what you're going to do with your research? We also developed a systematic way of reviewing completed research in construction, health, and safety, going back and saying, well, is there important research that's come out that hasn't been adequately disseminated and adopted, and can we help prioritize which ones we could work on to help push it out further? And also, how can we help make sure that at least that first step of user-friendly products happens with all of our research? So that's one, the synthesis and translation piece of what we've been working on. And the second, in terms of capacity and infrastructure, is we've really focused on partnership building, feeling like that's the way you're going to build the capacity and that relationship between research and practice. We started with a in-depth case study of the asphalt partnership that was a very successful partnership between labor and management and manufacturers, wherein they figured out how to, you know, where they were fighting for a long time about whether asphalt fumes were a human carcinogen or not, and in the end decided to put their heads together, work together, and come up with a way to build ventilation systems onto highway-grade pavers so that now all highway-grade pavers in the U.S. have a ventilation system. Was good for everybody in the end instead of fighting, and good for communities because it was better for the environment as well. So it's that win-win-win kind of model. And then we looked and, well, are they the only partnership that we can find like this? We looked around, we found other partnerships and wrote those up and then tried to use those principles to help sponsor new partnerships. And our major one was the Masonry Partnership, I'll talk about in a minute. We also had a couple small partnerships looking at prevention of falls among Latino workers with Philiposh and LOHP. And we also built a partnership with OSHA and NIOSH and CPWR. Each of us have been working separately on construction, health, and safety. And, you know, really, it's been very broken the way that OSHA and NIOSH were designed to work together but have not, and so this was a place we really have brought together OSHA, NIOSH, and the Construction Center to work together, scheme together, and put our heads, resources together, and to try to build the capacity of all our organizations in the process of each dissemination effort that we took on. And, you know, we're really excited how things worked out with the Masonry Partnership, which involves the Masonry Institute, which is the labor management entity, and then the organization of Masonry contractors and the union, the Bricklayers Union, and went through a process with them where they we pulled out all of the research that was related to masonry, all the ergonomic issues, the chemical exposure issues, the falls issues, every place where we'd done research that was relevant to masonry, and it was a huge list. I mean, it was a huge laundry list of things that were not well accepted in the industry, but were well established as being important to improving health and safety. That was taken out to all of the separate craft committees in the industry, where they talked about, well, which one of these are most important, which of them are things that we think we can accomplish, how do we want to tackle this, and they picked some priorities and started pushing them out and trying to influence the industry and say, how do we actually change the masonry industry for the better by working together? And it's been really exciting, and I'll report in a minute about the survey before and after, what kind of impact that's had. And just to say also that, well, I'll get there. Another example of partnership of working with OSHA and NIOSH is the National Falls Campaign that I think, you know, many of you are familiar with. I think it's been very successful in terms at least of having a lot of visibility, a lot of local effort, so that not only is it done on a national level, but, you know, Massachusetts has, you know, their own big program. St. Louis did, Kentucky did. It's really, you know, really took on, really spread as an example of a cooperative effort and a partnership effort. And just briefly, this is the working group in addition to Falls. This is the set of issues that we chose to work on, and over the 4 years have done a big push around these issues that are a combination of specific research like nail guns, where we have really clear evidence of what we need to do but a hard time changing the practice in the industry, to some cross-cutting issues like, you know, so many of the studies that were done say, boy, when all is said and done, it really comes down to safety culture and safety climate, but what is that really? How do we measure it? How do we affect it? And yeah, I see you shaking your head, but we feel differently about it in construction. So this is like the range of things that we've been working on. And so then getting to the third level of, you know, really trying to measure our reach and impact, and that's very, very challenging. Just, you know, what can we say? And, of course, it's a work in progress rather than a finished project. But, you know, what we have to work with includes, you know, there's the easiest level is metrics that you can use for reach. How many people, you know, came to your website? How many people downloaded? How many people got the product that you put out there? You know, that's the easiest and isn't always easy to do even that. Then there's, you know, trying to measure the commitment from partners, and then trying to see is there any change in actual actions or conditions in the workplace. And so as one example of the metrics we're able to collect this fall campaign, we signed on more than 70 groups. We were able to evaluate the level of engagement, meaning how connected did those 70 partners feel to the campaign, how much activity did they undertake, how many programs did they host. We were able to measure downloads, how many media outlets picked up the program. And in this last year, we moved to this idea of OSHA sponsoring these national stand-downs where there were training programs sponsored over the country, and we were just the trainings we were able to count, which is most of them we weren't able to capture and count, but there were 1.5 million people trained in fall protection just among those that we could count. So in terms of partner commitments, one of the exciting things is that all those groups who found where there were partnerships, plus the ones that we supported, we brought together and got a commitment to ongoing a network so that you begin to build an infrastructure, not just single partnerships, but partnerships that are interacting with each other. And the next, I'm out of time, so I won't talk tomorrow about partnerships. But in terms of the masonry partnership, we did find that there were actual changes from before and after the beginning of the period and the end in terms of actual changes in practice, significant changes in practices, and sometime we'll do a paper just on this because it's interesting what they were able to change and how and why. One of the big things we learned in the project is just how daunting this work is, you know, that there's really a lot of barriers to change in construction, really a lot. And, you know, I would say, since I don't have time to talk about all of these, I'll talk about the bottom one, which is, you know, it's very, very frustrating when you have clear evidence about how to make a workplace safer and you can't mandate it because you can't get regulations. It's a really broken system. And so we're put in the position of having to market health and safety practices rather than mandate them. And that's just wrong. And yet if we just stand on the side and scream it's wrong, you know, that's wrong too because we're not making the change that needs to happen. So, you know, while we, so among our lessons, I would say, the first is don't give up on regulation. You have to keep fighting for it, regulation and proper enforcement of those regulations. And in the meantime, you do need to find the right intermediaries, the right partners, the parties who can help you reach and influence your audience and take a very, very traditional industry and get them to consider change. You really have to think about how you frame this. Often talking about health and safety isn't the issue that people are concerned about, so how do you build the health and safety into the issue that people care about, which is jobs, jobs, and jobs. Of course, we have to figure it out as we go along and keep improving from one effort to the next instead of starting over. You know, really, what did we learn about what works each step of the way? And in terms of future directions, just trying to really understand the complex set of players that are involved in making decisions about construction, about, you know, really, you know, we've come to learn, for example, that, you know, the owners of projects are really where the lever you have to pull. That's who really can influence things and how to get them engaged more. And what are the connections between all these groups that have an emphasis, a role to play. The second is scaling up. When you find something that works, we found something that, like, say, works in masonry, how do you bring that to all of the trades rather than one trade or one sector of construction? The third is really needing to pay more attention to injury and illness disparities. Immigrant workers are really continuing to take the brunt of the hazards in the construction industry, and that's where we need to put a lot more of our focus. And finally, the question of evaluation and figuring out, it's important to learn what works, and on the other hand, it's expensive to do good evaluation research on what works, so finding that right balance of how can we measure what we're doing, and yet how much of our resource do we want to spend on measuring it versus doing it, and this is the age-old, you know, conundrum that, you know, we're still struggling with. Is there, you know, a faster, easier way to do that? So with that, thank you.
So we have time for maybe one question or two.
I'm not going to talk about safety. My question is, do you self-censor when you go into this process? And what I was thinking is, from the time that Jim Weeks wrote this thing on construction hazards and state-of-the-art reviews, if anybody remembers that from the 1980s, to current research, the issue of production pressure on time under budget is a huge occupational safety and health issue. Is that something that you would try to move forward, or is that, you know, no, we're not going to get consensus here, so we're not even going to look at it, or, you know, that's not what's going to go into this model?
Well, first of all, because we try to do this partnership model, we really try to have the partners define what the issues are, but that issue will come up with every partnership, every time, because, and it is, although you hate the term, it is what in our industry people would call safety climate or safety culture, which is the culture is get the job done at any price, at any cost, at any hazard, and, you know, faster, 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 and that is not a safety culture. So that has come up with every partnership is, you know, how do we address that? How do we incentivize the good contractors who are taking the time to train people, to provide the protective equipment, to set the work site up properly? you know, and then they have to compete with their, with competitors who are flying under the radar and doing, taking the shortcuts and doing, so trying to build a high road alliance is certainly a theme that comes up throughout the work.
Thank you. I think we'll have to call it. Yeah, I'm sure you can find her later.
Yep.
Thanks so much.